This is the Right Brain Podcast, where we help you become a working writer by answering your questions, sharing your journeys, and helping you navigate the world of writing. I'm Shanta Grimes, and I'm here with Junita and Meg, and our special guest is Beth from Autocrit. I'm really excited to have Beth here. Autocrit is one of our favorite tools. So Junita, Meg, and I are super excited to talk to Beth and get to know more about Autocrit. Make sure you check out the show notes where you will have a link to Autocrit so you can check it out yourself. So I'm super excited. Hi, Beth.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Can you start out just by introducing people who are listening to Autocrit and what it is?
Wow. Absolutely. I would love to. Autocrit, so AUTOCRIT.com, is an online book editor. We're actually the only online book editor built from real best-selling books. And what makes that important is you can take your manuscript and benchmark it against other best-selling books across your genre, even as broad as fiction or nonfiction. If you want to compare it to horror, or if you want to get down to your favorite author, say you really aspire to be like Stephen King, you can actually benchmark your work against the works of Stephen King and compare things like how many adverbs do you use? How many variations of sentence starters do you use? How many initial names and pronouns do you use? All kind of benchmarked against books and genres that we already know people love to read. Plus, once we find those areas for potential improvement, Autocrit actually shows them to you in full context of your writing and then lets you make the decision whether you remove it, replace it, ignore it. You're still in creative control. It just gives you the full context of things like repeated words, for example, and filler words, one of my big sore spots.
Mine too. I'm a traditionally published author, and every time I've been published, every single time, the publisher sends me a personalized style guide, which is really cool and not something I knew would happen before I was published. So that was like, it's super cool because it's a style guide to my personal writing bad habits or whatever. And so I always tell people, like, on that is there's a list of words I overuse every time. Like, I know that when I need an action beat, my characters smile or nod. And I have to remember, it's okay. You know what I mean? I'm writing fast. And I just want to get the draft done. But I have to go back and find all those smiles and do something better. I can't have my character smiling like 2,000 times in one book. Too much smiling. It's weird.
Well, that's perfect. And, you know, I would like to call those potential areas of improvement rather than like, here's a big list of all the things that you do wrong. Just a little bit of a positive spin. But Autocrit will actually let you, in this example, Shanta, I would set the word smile or smiled as one of your personal words and have Autocrit look specifically for that. Now that you know that's your jam, is having your smile, you can actually, I call it training your robot. You can actually tell Autocrit some of those idiosyncrasies about your writing style and have them look across your, you know, 100,000 word manuscript rather than having to do a control find every time.
Right.
My character is always smiling and nodding. So Autocrit can
mine too. Smiling, nodding,
stay on their shoulders.
Tilting their head. Mine tilt their head or they lift an eyebrow. And I'm like, I always take out every lift an eyebrow. I don't even know why I still put them in because that's such an unusual, like nobody knows how to actually do. But I'm like they can always do it one. And so I make myself take it out, but I write it in the first place. I don't know why. And I also look for words that are like higher level. Like I have a tendency to use the word felt when it would be better for me to show it rather than say they're like telling that they're feeling something. It would be better for me to look at what's around that word and see, is it clear already they're feeling this? Do I need to say it at all? If it's not, then I have to go in and make that better. So those, that's yes. another thing I look for that I think AutoCrit could be really good for.
Yeah, we do have a nice, strong report around showing versus telling. And the thing that gets me every time is like, oh, I thought I did so well with that segment. And like, oh, it showed up on my report still. And then when I reread it with fresh eyes, I realize, like, oh, yeah, that wasn't that great at all. Yeah. But that's what editing is all about, taking out the bits mm-hmm. that don't belong in there. Just cut away everything that doesn't belong.
I'm wondering, like, if you're going to self-publish, would something like AutoCrit be enough? Or is it like a pre-editor editor?
I think it depends on a couple other factors. One, how dedicated are you to doing the work of doing your own self-edit versus, mm-hmm. you know, can you afford to have an editor do the whole thing? Even if you hire an editor, we still recommend AutoCrit before you send it to that editor because
it'll be cheaper.
It will be so much cheaper, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're paying somebody by the page or by the word count. Mm-hmm. You don't want them to take out all your smiling characters when you can easily do that yourself with AutoCrit. So we recommend it before you send to a paid editor. And mm-hmm. certainly if you decide to kind of hardcore do your own self-editing, then go into beta readers, sensitivity readers, alpha readers, even definitely run it through AutoCrit several times just to get it as polished as it can be. You never get a first chance, never get another chance to make that first impression. So whether you're sending it to alpha beta readers, editors, or straight to a publisher, or even self-publishing, you know, doing that polish is just critical.
So can you walk us through what happens? Like you upload your whole manuscript?
Mm-hmm. I can. So you, you can upload your whole manuscript. If it is, you know, 500,000 words long, you may prefer to work, upload chapter by chapter, or if it,
please don't have 500,000 word manuscripts, guys, that's too long. Show some restraint.
Yeah, if you have a 500,000 word manuscript, you may actually have 3 books. So,
or at least 5, maybe 5.
Maybe even 5. So you come into AutoCrit and you can either upload the file or you can even copy paste. Then the first thing that I recommend people do is to just run the summary report. And that's going to tell you a few things at a glance. Depending on what you're benchmarking against, and I have an example here in front of me, sample text of Kafka's Metamorphosis, mm-hmm. comparing against general fiction. And the overall score of this version of the manuscript is a 69.17. That just means that's my baseline. I want to look across all the categories, pacing and momentum, dialogue, word choice, strong writing, and repetition, and see right below that visual indicator of the overall score, see where I had the most indicators. And that's going to tell me which major structural component I want to work on first, or which one I want to work on last. The beauty of AutoCrit at this point is if I see 1,300 indicators under strong writing and only 40 under dialogue, maybe I feel a little bit intimidated and I just go for the dialogue one. It's got a low number already. I can hit that one and clean it up pretty quickly.
Is there an overall number? Like you said, 69 point something. Is there like, what do you want that to be?
It's actually, I don't want to say it's irrelevant, but the goal of that number is not to get to 100. It's to actually look at your score when you start and then make those improvements and see that score going up. So the 69.17 that I have with this sample manuscript, if I were to fix some of the strong writing and fix some of the pacing issues or the repetition issues, then that score would go up. And most authors score around the 80 mark, 74 to 84 seems to be the sweet spot. Some people go a little bit higher, but rarely lower.
Is any book 100?
No.
A lot of the bestsellers like Stephen King and all them write in the 70s, don't they?
It's true. Yeah, I was just about to say, we actually, every month, we add a new author to our catalog. And then we take one of their works and run it through what we call what's the score. And we break down everything that's happening in that novel from an autocrit perspective. You're exactly right. It's typical to be around 74. Stephen King is my favorite example of that. And he uses, despite his famous quote, the road to
lots of adverbs.
He uses a surprising number of adverbs. So
it's not surprising when you look at the length of his books, man.
It's true. It's
you can't get to a book that long without adverbs.
Those are my favorite autocrit videos, are the ones where they break down the other people's books.
We have so much fun doing those. Did you guys see the video we just did with Grant Faulkner, the executive director of NaNoWriMo? He actually gave us one of his manuscripts and let us run it through What's the Score and kind of give him some autocrit feedback as one of our NaNoWriMo events this year.
Oh, fun.
It was so much fun. He was such a great sport about it. It was a really uniquely written story, just how he managed the points of views and the chapters. And it was written in a very unique way. So there were a lot of things that we were like, oh, this is because you've written as an epistolary or whatever. But overall, he scored quite well.
Something that we've been doing is focusing on gender and audience. And one thing I like about autocrit is y'all did one video, not just recently, I think, about power words. And you were showing in that how certain authors, popular authors, lean toward one way or the other, like maybe powerful words that were love words. And it was romance. So their general overall feel for their novel had this emotive feel of romance because of the power words they chose to use, or maybe fear and it be a thriller or something like that. And I thought that was really cool.
I love that report, not just because I love a pie chart, but I do. It really gives you a feel for what to expect with your book and what your readers can expect. Honestly, I have a manuscript I worked on during NaNoWriMo, and because I somehow took it as a personal challenge to not even be a pantser, but just like do absolutely nothing in preparation, I wasn't even sure where it was going. It might turn out to be a thriller. I was just letting the characters lead me. And I ran it through the power words report and I was really surprised, like, oh, it's got a lot of like drama, tension. It's got some fear. It's got some love. So it really is going to help me as I go to edit that manuscript to dial in what I want the overall emotional tones and themes to be in that book.
And I love that. I'm going to watch it again. there was a lot of good information in that video.
We'll link to that in the show notes.
Oh, yeah.
And another thing that you did, it was one on starter sentences and nouns and pronouns. And boy, do I suck at that. And I know a lot of our ninjas ask all the time about help with that kind of thing, because they do get a lot of he said, she said, or or he this, he that. And so I thought that was a really good one, too. Talking about the repetitive words and it being boring and all that kind of thing.
Exactly. I think the sentence starters, we had so much fun with that, because as you use autocrit and you review these, even reviewing the videos of the deep dive live sessions that we've been holding, as you start to see where you can potentially improve your writing, that will become an ingrained habit. So as you're writing over time, it will become less automatic to start every sentence as he said, he said, he said, she said, you know, Bob said. It just becomes something that you're more aware of as you're writing, even in
some. I always tell people anything that you have to fix 2,000 times,
learn how to not. Yeah, it is a very good reinforcement if you have to change that so many times. But you know, it does make you aware of things like varying your sentence starters and sticking to the said and asked versus queried. Or,
and y'all talked about rhythm in that one too, about the rhythm of your sentence and the rhythm of your writing overall.
Yeah, the overall pacing is so important, and the pacing expectations of your reader are going to vary by genre. If you're writing a thriller, especially in times of high action, they want short, choppy sentences to really drive that home. Where if you're writing a slow burn romance, you know, you may want longer sentences. You may want compound sentences. You may want to slow that pace down a little bit until you get to a more dramatic scene. So the pacing part of it is incredibly helpful. The big thing that I've learned in the past year or so is with our horror course, we're telling people how to build tension and really get gory and get in there. But you also want to be able to give your readers a bit of a break. So varying that pacing so you don't give your reader, well, basically reader fatigue. You know, they
can't, don't exhaust them.
Yeah, don't exhaust them. Going full bore all the time. Be purposeful about putting in some of those slower paced sentences and paragraphs.
One point y'all made where you're talking about how y'all analyzed, that you're talking about this author used a lot of internal thought or emotion. I think it was a thriller, maybe.
Probably.
And how it created the emotive feel, and how that worked because it was a thriller or horror or something like that, that used a lot of internal thought to get it told.
When you tell a story from that character's point of view, you can really take their perspective and their life view and use their character experiences, even if they don't appear in the book, to drive the character's behavior. And you can reveal that through, you know, kind of the internal thought process or the inner monologue, if you will. It's a really neat technique to use.
Yeah. And using autocrit, because you see the visual of that, that's what's so interesting about, because it shows you that visual of those words and you get this visual picture. I don't know, somehow it does something for your writing, and when you can visually see it, you're not just looking at words, but you're looking at a picture of your writing.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And everything that we're aiming to do as authors is to draw readers through the words on the page and immerse them in that scene, make them feel like they're really there and they're experiencing this firsthand and they're emotionally connecting with the characters. So the fact that you don't notice the words on the page is really wonderful, right? It's just, that's the goal, is to be so immersed and present in the scene as the reader, that if you are using maybe complex words that throw your readers out of that vibe, that's something to look out for.
I have a personal question. I don't know if Autocrit can help me with it, though. Tonda told me to save it for here, so I'm going to ask you.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Can you use Autocrit for short stories?
Yes, you can. I wouldn't use it for, like, a diary entry. We need a minimum of 200 words.
I thought when we talked before, you said 10,000.
No.
Okay, wow. I'm glad you asked, Junita.
Yes, I am. 200 is the absolute minimum. The more you have, the better results you're going to get. 10, 20,000 is just kind of typical as people are writing, you know, getting their first drafts done, getting novellas under their belts, etc. Typically, 30 to 50 is where a lot of people end up. The short story, though, is actually a very specific genre that you can choose to compare your text to. Within Autocrit, you can choose, I mentioned, general fiction or two types of general nonfiction, prescriptive and biographical. But you can also dive into short stories, screenplays, academics, memoirs, business, fantasy, magazine articles, movie scripts. So definitely upload your short story and just select short story as your compare your text to, and that'll help you out a lot.
Glad you asked. You mentioned,
I am too, because I'm definitely going to do it now.
You mentioned magazine articles, and I teach freelancing. So I'm wondering, for that, is that actually going to compare against, like, other magazine articles that are out there and published?
It is an amalgamation of tens of thousands of published magazine articles.
Okay.
So yes, because the writing is so different in something like a magazine article versus a fantasy novel, you know, it's interesting to see the differences and the word choice that gets kind of highlighted in there.
Right, right.
The example you used was Metamorphosis, which is a classic. It was written a long time ago, and you're comparing it to modern bestsellers.
When I ran my initial comparison, I used general fiction, which is all the fiction that we have in the system from the last couple hundred years, I want to say.
So I'm curious your system addresses that. Like, we were talking about show versus tell, and older books like Metamorphosis probably would not have scored very well in the show versus tell. But like, my very favorite book of all time is Little Women, and it would not score well in show versus tell. It was written over 100 years ago, and that's just how stories were told. told then, it wouldn't do me very good to compare my own modern YA books to Little Women.
Right. That's where I would recommend selecting a specific author. If you're writing, say, a romance and compare to Brenda Jackson, for example, a very prolific modern romance author. Or if you're writing epic fantasy, and I mean completely epic, Brandon Sanderson is an excellent one. I would get down into the individual author comparison for that. But something like a YA overall or a general fiction comparison is such an amalgamation that it's truly successful books over a pretty long period of time. But
so I wonder if that's why no book scores 100, because it's too broad to be 100.
I don't think any book would ever score a 100 because of all the different weights and factors that are being compared. We haven't done a specific one book from one author compared to that same book from that same author, because the system isn't really designed to do the massive amounts of analysis on such small amount of work. But when we take, say, Lee Child, so we've been him in the system, and we recently ran one of his new books against himself, and he still was like an 80 or so. Because,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, because the way he uses his...
So Lee Childs is the Jack Reacher.
He's the Jack Reacher guy. Yeah.
Guy. Yeah. His books. And so he's been writing Jack Reacher books for 20 years. So if it has all, or I don't even know, maybe even longer than that, right? A long time. So if it's comparing a book he wrote today to all the books he's written 20 years ago, there might've been different rules or different things that readers wanted.
He was a different writer 20 years ago.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. Exactly. I think it is encouraging to me to see when we do, and we don't do it often, but you know, sometimes around the office, you just got to have some fun and like,
yeah.
Let's compare Lee Child to Lee Child and see what happens. And next thing you know, there's like a tear in the space-time continuum and like, it's not recommended, but it shows that the authors are growing over time. When you're as prolific and as has such longevity as Lee Child.
Right.
If you haven't evolved, you haven't really maintained your relevancy. And he certainly has. Jack Reacher is incredibly popular. But I've never seen anybody score 100. And I just don't think it would, because the weighting and the calculations and just the fact that everybody writes differently.
Interesting. So I guess my question, though, is that how does the system account for how books were written 100 or 200 years ago versus how they are now?
Let me double check on the oldest age of the books that we have in there. I know we've got some things that I can't really reveal just yet on the
podcast. Yeah.
Stay tuned for future updates on that. That will let us get a little more time sliced, if you will. So.
Oh, cool.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Heard it here first, guys.
Gosh. Well, it's been nice working with AutoCrit, because I can feel my pink slip coming right now.
All right. Yeah. Mom's the word, everybody.
Help save me. I think there are just so many incredible enhancements coming to the platform that I'm not at liberty to discuss in detail, but stay tuned.
We definitely will.
I think for comparing modern works, going to an author in particular would be definitely more dialed in to a year or set of years that you wanted to emulate, in terms of like,
right, that makes
sense. How long has Diana Gabaldon even been alive, like, and how many years has she been writing? So those cover really modern ones. But
like, even her, the first Outlander book is 20 or more years old.
Is that right? Oh, has it been that long?
Yeah.
Look,
you're making me feel old. When I was in my mid-20s, I'm 49, yeah, it's been a long time. That was like, it was like her fifth book had come out or was on its way out in more than 20 years ago. So,
we've got political books from like Henry Kissinger, and you know, that's been a minute.
Yeah. In 2021, my big fat goal is to self-publish, like to move into self-publishing with romance. So my traditionally published books are middle grade and YA. And my self-published books will be romance. And I just finished one, like just. Oh, yes. I'll be interested to see how my book compares.
We'll see. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm interested to see where your Power Words report comes out, because a lot of the romance that I've seen come through the system, you really want three major themes. And it's often love, obviously, lust, mm-hmm. and fear. Because are they going to end up together? Are they not? You know, is someone sick or dying, or the lake house is on fire, or the covered bridge, or whatever it is? Sorry, I've been seeing a lot of Nicholas Sparks stuff.
Have y'all made any videos focusing on that for each lot gender, for the three major themes that you should shoot for?
Genre. Yeah.
Genre. Oh, I'm sorry. Genre.
No, but that's a really good idea. I think I'll ask Gareth about that. That'd be a fun
one. Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. One of my favorite was your Power Words when y'all just recently did that. I have a question though. It's about AutoCrit, but it's more about your tools that you're using. So I think you have a YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that when you do your videos, y'all pull comments from when you're live up on your screen. What are you using to do that? I was wondering.
Yeah. We use a platform called StreamYard, StreamYard. And it's actually a multicasting platform that some gamers recommended to us that allows us to all be in the same, quotes, virtual studio, if you will, and see comments that are coming in from YouTube or Facebook or wherever we're streaming live to. Love that feature of StreamYard. It's been a tremendously helpful platform for us.
It looks great too. And I just thought it was really cool how y'all would pull people's comments up there and flash up there so we could remember what you're talking about. As you talk about, we see the question that was asked. And so I've enjoyed that aspect of it.
Oh, great. Yes. We can do comments from the communities. We can make little banners on our own and put those up there. And I highly recommend it. It's not a very expensive platform. We've been using it for, gosh, 6-8 months now. Just really pleased. They add new features very regularly as well.
And that is really
cool. I will look into that. So is there anything else about AutoCrit that general readers need to know, or listeners?
Oh boy, so many things. We're fun.
Like if there's one thing that someone should look up on AutoCrit, what would it be? Like you're intimidated by the idea of running your whole novel through there and doing all the different things. Like what's the one most useful thing, or the one thing that you would tell someone like you should do this first?
So I would still point them to that summary report. Because the summary gives you that overall score, which is fine. And you know where you're starting, but as you scroll down through there, you can see these little gauges and dials where they go from great over in the blue side to excess in the red side. And for example, I'm using Metamorphosis compared against all of general fiction, and my filler words are just pegged out in the excess. So that image right there just tells me at a glance, I've got a real trouble spot with filler words in this manuscript. So scroll through the results and look for things that just kind of jump out at you as being very much in the red or very out of average or norm, and then start there. The filler words for this one are just, that's where I
was. Right. I just ran my short story, and on adverbs, I'm on good. 37.
Yeah. Great.
But my generic descriptions is over going towards the excess with a score of 17. So I'm assuming that's not filler words though. My filler words are average. My show versus tell is over going towards the excess. Mm-hmm. Has a score of 83.
I think that with those dials and depending on the length of your manuscript and what you're comparing it to, those numbers in those dials can vary a lot, mm-hmm. but wherever that little gas gauge pointer, that little speedometer lands is going to give you that easy visual indicator. For me, those are the hot spots to go.
And you want to try to get all of them in the good, the good range?
Good or average is usually the best. Like if you have it at great, that's terrific. The cautionary tale that I would tell to everybody using AutoCrit, and we say this a lot, is don't get so driven by the numbers and the dials, even though I'm super like graphically motivated. Like I love a pie chart, a gas gauge, but getting it from average to great at the cost of you becoming unhappy with the way your own story and creative work flows or feel, right. That's the balance. And that's the most.
I wonder if hyper-focusing on getting everything to great would make your work generic.
It might. It might. I think people have such creativity that they could not suffer from it being generic, but more likely suffer from it being
boring,
feeling boring and contrived. And from the author's point of view, feeling like this isn't the work that I intended to put out to the world. It gives you the opportunity, say, if I use a whole slew of filler words, maybe I did that on purpose. Maybe I'm using it as a technique. So as you run that detailed report and see each of those filler words, you can make that decision on a case-by-case basis. And maybe that's the vibe you want to send out into the world. The goal for AutoCrit is just to help you understand the mechanics.
So you're doing it intentionally.
That you're doing it very intentionally, yes.
I like it.
Yeah. We talked a little bit at the start of the show about, you know, some of those things that may not show up as a filler word, but are our own personal filler words. Like,
like felt.
Yeah. Like felt, which is definitely a show of tell versus a show. And
yeah.
Smiling. Or if I have a character who really likes cheese, I'm going to go in and put the word cheese or smile or tell or felt or whatever into my personal words list under the AutoCrit settings.
Uh-huh.
Spend a little time focusing on that. Once you know where those hotspots may be for you, using that personal words list to make sure you just haven't gone overboard saying something like the word cheese over and over, mm-hmm. unless you mean to. And that'll really highlight, have you used it as much as you intended or not as much as you intended? And, you know, in the same proximity to one another, when we talk about frequency and repetition, it's not just the count, it's the proximity on the page and surrounding content.
I have a question. I can compare my new novel that I just finished to other romance novels, but is it like all kinds of romance, or do you have it romance broken down by genre?
Romance right now is just one genre. And then we have
several authors. Romance
authors in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We, on our last podcast or a previous podcast, I don't know how the order they'll come out, but in a previous podcast that we talked to someone about coming up with like a reader avatar. That was Cindy Heath. And Cindy talked about, she made up one for us, right, to talk about. And it was a romance because she knew I was writing romance, but it was like a sweet romance, right? So the author that this reader avatar would enjoy a lot was Debbie McComber, mm-hmm. right? Like super sweet,
mm-hmm.
sweet, sweet, sweet romance. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing pretty steamy romance, right? Like heavily steamy romance. And so
erotica.
Yeah. No, it's not quite erotic, but you know, it's toeing the line. If all of the romance books are together, I guess so you're not specifically looking for like heat and stuff like that, like heat levels for romance. So maybe it won't matter.
I don't know. I'd be interested to get your thoughts after you run your manuscript through there. I mean, we have Debbie McComber as one of our.
Yeah.
Comparisons. So maybe run against romance and then against Debbie. And
well, definitely. I don't write sweet romance. If you had like Christine Feehan or steamier writer.
Nalini
Singh. Ruby Dixon.
Ruby Dixon's like a rent. I love Ruby Dixon. She writes about blue aliens.
Oh my God.
Venus spurs. But they're so fun and addictive. They're like potato chip books.
I call them mental.
And there's like
Oreos.
A 30 of them, man. Yes. And you can't stop. Don't say I didn't warn you. If you look up Ruby Dixon, you'll be I got to spend the whole rest of 2020 thinking about blue aliens with penis spur.
I feel like this interview has taken a turn, and I love
it. It has taken a turn. I'm sorry. That happens. That happens with Ninja Riders.
I love it. I'm here.
Yeah, welcome to Ninja Riders. You can go off the rails at least a couple times a week.
Yeah.
That's
you awesome. May never be on another podcast with penis spur.
Oh, you know, that's fair. I probably will.
Oh my goodness, I can't even. I have
I'm not writing Blue Aliens.
So once you run your story through the report, I noticed that you can like make changes as you're looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you just export that to a document and do it that way? Like there's not a way for you to update the document that you loaded to begin with, right?
Yeah, you can make the changes right there in the AutoCrit window and then save that file and export it as your newly polished manuscript.
Right. So you just give it a
new. It'd be like version 2 or whatever.
Yeah, like revised or whatever. Yeah.
I've had somebody ask me and I didn't really know the answer to it.
You're a power user. If you don't know the answer, I might not know.
well, you might. But they asked me about Pro Writing Aid and Grammarly. Can you use AutoCrit in place of those tools or do you need both of them when you're, I mean, it's AutoCrit set up for a different type of thing than Pro Writing Aid per se.
Do you guys do like a spell check and a grammar check?
We have a spell check. We have a grammar check. We have readability stats. So there's a lot of overlap in like the Pro Writing Aid, Grammarly, AutoCrit Venn diagram, if you will. I think the difference really is with AutoCrit being able to benchmark your work against authors that you may want to emulate or not emulate, as the case may be, and really get statistics and data on your word use and patterns as kind of benchmarks against other best-selling books. We're the only platform in the industry that offers that.
And cute little graphs.
And a pie graph. You had me at pie graph.
Yeah.
And a little jumping auto book mascot.
I like the gauges. I like the little half full gauges. And
yes. Yeah.
It tends to be full all the time. So
we actually have a lot of clients that use like a PWA or a Grammarly when they're writing their, I won't even call it like their first draft, their pile of words as it is.
Zero draft.
Exactly. The version 0. They're still wanting to make it as grammatically correct and technical as they can at that point. But when it's time to really dig in and do that line editing and get into intentional word usage, that's where I would definitely stick with AutoCrit.
Yeah. Well, Beth, thank you so much for being here. Janita or Meg, do you have any last questions?
I was just watching your nano one that y'all just did.
Oh, good.
And I saw that you did 19 write-ins.
We did. Look, it was a combination of me getting well overly enthusiastic and just wanting to do more and more and more. Those things are addictive. And a little schedule mishap where I had something scheduled at 2 different times. So I just decided we're going to do both of them that day.
And this is your third year to actually do nano. And does it get better every year and easier to,
you know, it's
figure out?
It's interesting because we try different things every year. And with the world the way it is today in 2020 with, you know, a pandemic raging and it's an election year and it's hard to even compare one year of sponsorship to another. But I will say this is the first year that we have really gotten this engaged and hosted 19 write-ins and 6 different author interviews of people who have won Nano and gone on to be published, multiple books in a lot of cases. And we really had a blast with it. It was so much fun. We're going to continue doing write-ins through our AutoCrit author community on Facebook. In fact, I have one tomorrow, which is great because it even gives me time to set aside time to write and really be focused and keep getting that.
Yeah. Yeah, Ninja Writers does write-ins too. Maybe we should.
Yeah, we should do like a.
We should team up and show. Have a joint write-in between AutoCrit and Ninja Writers. That would be.
Oh, fun. We absolutely should. Yeah. That would be so much fun. You guys do write-ins every single day of the week, don't you?
We do.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Especially in November.
Yeah. But we're keeping them through December because they were so popular.
Right.
Oh, fun.
We have midnight ones and we have all different.
Yeah, they did midnight ones too. And I was talking to Beth before we started recording and they also have the Australians.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like their 4 p.m. ones or something.
We have some we have clients all across the world, and yeah. people are able to join from South Africa or Hawaii or Australia, you know, so we try to make things right. at different times. And then we also record all our events.
Yeah.
We have authors.
Similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's never going to be the perfect time for everyone. So, right.
well, that's why I say if we team up, then maybe we have more times available for.
Yeah.
Beth, I love having you on our round Ninja Riders because I always have so much fun. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Everyone, thanks for listening and have a great week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Bye, everybody.
This was the Right Brain Podcast. You can join us every Friday.